Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you got the best quality meat. So, let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Can one fight really lead to the death of an entire family? On April 22nd, 1920, a family was killed in a case that, it would later be learned, was all the result of one small argument between farmers. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. The first thing they noticed was that the family's washing had been on the line for days unattended to. Something the neighbors knew was odd enough that when a man named John Kraft drove by on his way to Turtle Lake in late April of 1920, he decided to take a stop at the Wolf family's North Dakota farmstead to see what was going on. Making his way down the driveway towards the family home, John was distracted by the sounds of pigs rooting in the nearby barn and decided to go take a look. There, half covered in dirt, mud, and hay, were the bodies of Jacob Wolf, the family's patriarch, and his two young daughters, Maria and Edna. Further investigation, this time through the trap door that led to the basement, led to the horrifying discovery of five more mutilated bodies. Those of Beta, the matriarch, her daughters, Bertha, Lydia, and Martha, as well as their hired hand, Jacob Hoffer. And still lying in her cradle was the sole survivor of the family massacre, the Wolf's 8-month-old daughter, Emma, shivering from the cold and weak with hunger. With the youngest victim aged just 3 and the hired hand, the oldest of the child victims, being only 13 years old, the complete horrors that John Kraft had stumbled upon was enough to make even the strongest man weep. In fact, despite how long ago this crime occurred, the truly horrific attacks with both a shotgun and a hatchet are still considered amongst the country's most brutal crimes, as well as the most sensational, and saw an unparalleled manhunt the likes of which had never been seen before. Before we go further, let's take a moment to find out a little more about the Wolf family and what led to the massacre that stole their lives away. Originally from Germany, having immigrated first to Russia, the Wolf family came to the still new state of North Dakota looking to tame the rugged land and make a life for themselves. Becoming one of the most prosperous and popular farmers in the Turtle Lake community, Jacob Wolf, 41 years old at the time of his death, was known to keep his farmstead neat and well cared for, was always up on all the new farming methods and trends, was considered quite a frugal man, but was also known as an incredibly hard worker. As far as anyone in the area knew, not a single soul had a problem with Jacob Wolf. At least, not enough to want him and his whole family dead. There was some friction between him and one of his neighbors, but according to most of the sources at the time, none of it was serious enough to breed any real animosity. However, there were other claims that Jacob, in the time leading up to his murder, did seem to fear for his life. And on one occasion, he stopped a friend on the street in Turtle Lake to tell him about a neighbor who he believed might want to do him harm. At the time, the friend brushed the whole thing off. And because of this, neither he nor anyone else who might have heard Jacob's musings took the time to ask what the neighbor's name was. Something that might have completely altered the course of the entire investigation. Back at the farmhouse, Sheriff Ole Steffered of McLean County arrived and stood in wait inside the crime scene with all 8 bodies and 3 neighbors who lived nearby. Sitting inside the darkened home, along with a man named Emmanuel Hoffer and 2 others with the last name Bossert, around the time the sun began to peek over the horizon, Emmanuel decided to get back into his vehicle and drive back to his own farm to get everyone some breakfast. The other 2 men joined him, and after waving them all off, the sheriff decided to take a step outside the home looking for some fresh air. At around 5:30 a.m., he heard the sounds of a car driving along the prairie and watched as it pulled along the far side of the Wolf home, stopped, and then a man walked around the corner of the home. Walking swiftly and seemingly ignoring the officer standing on the porch, Sheriff Steffered watched as this man started peeking through the windows and then made his way towards the barn, the same building where Jacob Wolf and his daughters were left after their murders. Calling out to the stranger, who didn't seem to notice he had company until that exact moment, the sheriff asked his name, and the man replied, "Henry Layer, I live not far from here. My, isn't this a terrible thing?" The pair began speaking back and forth while the sheriff waited for the other men to return. But at some point, he became incredibly suspicious of his new companion. Noticing that he seemed to keep his right hand in his suit jacket pocket at all times, when the men returned and after they all finished their breakfast, Sheriff Steffered pulled Emmanuel aside and asked if he happened to drive by the Layer farm on his way home, replying that, of course he did, and that the road to his home went right past the Layers. The sheriff noted to himself that Henry must have seen Emmanuel and the other men driving away from the Wolf farm, and deciding the place was likely deserted, drove over and began searching the property. A strange course of action, Sheriff Steffered couldn't help but think of the old adage, "A killer always returns to the crime scene." While Henry seemed anxious to assist in catching the murderer, offering sometimes ridiculous suggestions, all the while keeping his hand in his pocket, he had no clue that the sheriff working the case had already clocked him as a potential suspect. While the sheriff waited for him to make one wrong move, Henry, as the sun fully entered the sky, suggested quite randomly that they go out and hunt for eggs in the barn. With the other men reluctantly agreeing, feeling as though the action was quite trivial, one of the Bossert men was paired with Henry Layer, was there when he walked into the barn and pointed out a clutch of eggs for his companion to bend down and pick up. As he did so, Henry suddenly called out, "Ho, see what I found here under the hay, shotgun shells," dug through the hay, and came out with a handful of empty casings. Quickly handing off the evidence to the sheriff, Steffered noted how Henry no longer kept his hand in his suit pocket, and how, despite turning the hay over in the barn shortly after the crime was discovered, None of the other officers involved found the casings that Henry seemed to find with absolutely no issue. Things were adding up, but though suspicious, none of this was enough for an arrest to be made. As the morning wore on, a crowd of hundreds gathered around the farmstead, eager to find out what happened to the Wolf family. As more investigators joined in, one of which was the chief of police from nearby Bismarck, Chris Martinson, all the lawmen put their heads together to try and suss out the details of the case. Unfortunately, as days passed, every single clue they found seemed to lead to nothing more than a dead end. And despite the $1,000 reward, no one came forward with anything that helped lead to a break in the case. People were questioned, alibis were checked into, two arrests were made, both were released, and all the while, the entirety of Turtle Lake, and even the surrounding areas, found themselves on edge, worrying that a maniac was amongst them. In fact, farmers started sitting out on their porches all through the night, shotgun in hand, waiting to defend their homes and their families should the madman strike again. Though they did what they could to try and find their suspect, Sheriff Olsteferud kept his strange encounter with Henry Layer in the back of his mind, and eventually was able to confirm that he and John Wolfe, allegedly arguing over livestock and the fact that Henry seemed to like to speak with others about John's personal life, seemed to have a bit of bad blood between them. Was Henry Layer the neighbor that John was worried about just before his murder? With this in mind, the Wolf family was laid to rest in a funeral service attended by one of the biggest crowds the state had ever seen. A crowd under the careful watch of Detective Chris Martinson and Sheriff Olsteferud, who watched as, taking a break from his grief, Henry Layer walked up to each casket and lifted the lids as if wanting to see their faces one last time. While he was making himself seem even more guilty than before, other officers were at the Layer farmstead and began questioning one of Henry's daughters. She revealed that her father had been missing one morning the week before, and though she couldn't quite remember the exact day, officers became convinced that they might have found their killer. A few weeks passed while they tried to gather what they could against Henry Layer, but with the town getting restless and demanding the law seize someone, citizens started contributing to the growing reward as other law enforcement agencies came in to try and speed along the case. One of which was George McDowell, a special agent for the Northern Pacific Railway, and Eugene Franklin Hesner, a private operative for the Field Detective Agency of St. Paul, who was being represented by then Attorney General William Langer. Whether it was the addition of these new officers, the growing concerns from citizens, or the insistence of Sheriff Steferud, on May 13, 1920, unbeknownst to all those living near the farm, officers showed up at Henry Layer's home and quietly told him to come with them. Henry calmly told the officers that his wife would be afraid to stay at their farm alone and asked for permission to hitch a team of horses to a wagon for her so that she could get to a neighbor's home if necessary. Kissing his wife and children, saying goodbye in a manner that made it seem like he was not going to return, Henry joined the men in one of their vehicles and made his way with them into Washburn. En route, a planned ruse sprung into action as one of several private investigators stationed along the road jumped up and ran across the street. The officers, shouting and carrying on, jumped into action, got out of the car, and ran to grab their supposed runner. Taking him with them for some unknown crime, the undercover PI was placed in the same cell as Henry Layer, in hopes that he might just speak to his fellow captive and reveal the truth that could earn him his conviction. Rigging the cell with recording devices, Henry remained quiet, and the elaborate plan led to nothing as he maintained his innocence. The following day, not playing around anymore, Chris Martinson began questioning Henry about his whereabouts the evening of April 22nd. Believing this to be the time of death for the Wolf family, the detective pushed and pushed for hours with no luck. It wasn't until he was shown photographs of the brutalized family and the tragic state of the abandoned 8-month-old girl that Henry Layer finally broke down and confessed to his crimes. Noting the trouble between him and Jacob Wolf, he said that he walked into the farm that day and demanded money for the damages to his cow. According to the story, Henry's livestock had come onto the Wolf property, and Jacob's dog bit the animal. When Jacob refused, a fight ensued, and he demanded that Henry leave his property. When he did not, Henry claimed that Jacob got up and got out his shotgun, put two shells in the chambers, and pointed it straight at him. They began grappling over the gun when it suddenly discharged twice. One bullet killed 35-year-old Beta Wolf, and the other killed 13-year-old Jacob Hoffer. As Jacob fled his own home, Henry reached into a dresser and reloaded the weapon. Firing at Jacob Wolf, hitting him in the back, he ran up and shot the man again at close range to ensure his death. Around this time, two of the young girls came screaming and fled to the barn. Seizing the opportunity, he killed 9-year-old Maria and 7-year-old Edna before entering the home again and, shooting the two remaining Wolf daughters, used a hatchet to kill the last. Screaming for their lives, he killed 5-year-old Lydia, 12-year-old Bertha, and 3-year-old Martha. Dragging three of the bodies to the barn and covering them with hay and dirt, and then taking the others and pushing them into the cellar, he told the officer, quote, "The reason I did not kill the baby was, I believe, because I did not go into the room in which the baby lay." Insisting that the first two shots were indeed an accident, he said that his memory of the events were hazy and that he could not recall all the details, even all these weeks later. Immediately after presenting his confession to the district judge, Henry Layer pleaded guilty to his crimes and insisted that, whatever the quickest way to the penitentiary was, that's the method that he wanted. He was sentenced to life in prison plus hard labor, and less than 5 years later, Henry Layer passed away after an operation for appendicitis. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder, and thank you to Duh It's Steph for suggesting today's story. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on April 23rd. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon, or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.